I walked away. I was making great money, and money is not everything. I had to make a decision to let my yes be yes and my no be no, and I decided no more. I walked away from it. At that time, I was not working at a job. I was working on my doctorate degree, and then I said, okay, I need to go back to work because I need income. And then this opportunity with youth work came available, and I was like, this is it. I felt like revigorated. I felt rejuvenated. I felt like I was getting a second chance and a jump start because I've always cared for young people, and especially those who might not have a linear path, those who have this non-linear experience or journey. I was like, this is something I can do. I can make an impact, and I can be successful at helping others be successful.
Hello. I'm Paul Munier, the Executive Director of the Youth Intervention Programs Association, and I'm a youth worker at heart. I love to talk with youth workers from around the globe because I think the whole world should be hearing their stories. Together, we'll learn how their life experiences shape their work with young people. Welcome to this edition of The Passionate Youth Worker. Hi, everybody. For this episode, we're joined by Dr. Charisse Penn. She's the foster parent recruiter and the Y Thrive director at Specialized Alternatives for Family and Youth in Ohio in the United States. And just for the record, Dr. Penn has said it's okay for me to call her Charisse on this podcast. So I'm going to go with that so our conversation is just a little bit more intimate. Charisse, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul.
It's been wonderful to get to know you, and I'm so eager to find out more about your passion for youth work and all the things you've done to help young people. But I'm really curious about your education, and I'd like to start there. You have a doctorate degree in education, and what fueled you to go so far as to get a doctorate degree?
That's a great question. Well, I have a mother and a father who strongly believe in education. I took a nonlinear path, believe it or not, to getting my degrees. I graduated at the bottom of my class in high school, believe it or not. My focus was somewhere else. I was a teenage mother, if that tells you the story there. And I had this daughter who needed my attention at the time. So raising her was the primary focus and goal. But I knew, again, education was very, very important. And I decided once she got up in age and got settled that I was going to go back to school as an adult. And I went to a community college. And then from community college, I went to a private Christian college. And then from there, I went to a HBCU. So I wanted to have this very broad, comprehensive experience in the academy. And so that's how I ended up getting my doctorate degree.
Well, that's impressive. You went from the bottom of your class to having one of the highest degrees out there. And that's an impressive story and an impressive turnaround. What was it like for you when you were young and you were not succeeding in school? Did you know that you had more in you, or did you sort of believe this is the best I can do?
I knew I had more in me. I think I just lost focus of what was important. Also, I think that at times in education, if we don't identify when people are bored or they're not being stretched, then we end up finding other things to fulfill the void. And so I believe that's what happened to me.
Yeah. And which ways were you bored or just disinterested in school? How come it didn't capture your attention, do you think?
I think it was a combination of the two. The things that I really had an interest in, which was history, I thrived in those things. I loved history. And so I was fine in that area. But then in the other areas where I was bored, like English and math, I don't like this. What can I do to fulfill this time? Although those things were very important. And I knew I could do the work. It wasn't that I couldn't do the work. It's just I wasn't interested in the work. So,
yeah, well, that really speaks to the power of teachers and youth workers being able to engage young people. When you were growing up and bored in school, knowing you had capacity to do more. Did you have mentors that were trying to say, come on, Charisse, you got to get your grades up or focus on your education? Or what was that like for you?
So in my formative years, I was all in because of librarians. I loved the library. I was introduced to the library very early in life. So I loved going into the library. I loved using the Dewey Decimal System at that time. Yeah. I loved spending time researching books and looking for books. But as I become adolescent, right, things happen, things take a curve. And so I did not have as much influence from my teachers at that point. And then I did the Upward Bound program at The Ohio State University. And I loved that because it was a small cohort of people. They were people that looked like me, and we were all shooting for the same goal, and that was to get into college. So I loved Upward Bound. I recommend Upward Bound to anyone. And so that helped to get me back on track. So I was on and off, on and off, on and off through this nonlinear journey.
Yeah. When you were growing up, you didn't feel connected at school. What was your home life like? Did people support you? Did you have that kind of nurturing environment that young people need?
Absolutely. I had a loving, caring, nurturing environment from home. Absolutely. My parents did the best that they could do with what they knew how to do, which was great. I mean, my sister and I did very well at home. Probably if homeschool was popular back then, I could see us even thriving even more if we were homeschooled. That probably would have been better for us long term because we would have been able to be stretched the way that we needed to be stretched. So, but being in public school at that time, again, you just follow a certain curriculum and this is what you do. But we definitely had the support needed from our home life, and we had a good home life.
Oh, that's great. That's always wonderful to hear. When you were bored in school and not, you know, engaged in a way to your, that was allowing you to grow intellectually and emotionally, and I would imagine because of that boredom, what do you think those lessons taught you about young people in general?
That we're much smarter than adults realize, that we do need to be focused in regards to things that are passionate to us, but then also understanding that you have to be determined and you have to follow the program sometimes when you might not want to. There's a way to do things and you might not agree with that way. But if you go ahead and do that, you'll be much better in the long run.
How come we don't see the potential in young people? You said it so eloquently, I think. Young people are often smarter than we give them credit for. Why don't we see that? And from your perspective?
Because I think that at times we think we know it all. We think that we have the answers. We think that children don't bring value into the world until they become an adult and get a job and work. And that's just not true. Actually, it's the opposite way around. Children bring all the value into the world, and we should be looking to them in ways to act, in the way to engage individuals just with a pure heart, with an innocence, with a knowing.
Yeah. Often, if you want to look into the future, just see what the young people are talking about and saying and doing and believing. And I think that's where we're going to go. I think that's so true. How is, did that impact you in your work with young people? Are you talking to young people about these kinds of things?
Absolutely. I talk to them and I want to know, what does life mean to you? And I get different answers. I get the individual youth who says, life means to me, you know, helping others, and I want to be a nurse or I want to be a doctor. And then I have the other spectrum where they say, life doesn't mean anything to me. I'm scared to walk on the streets. I'm scared that I'm going to get shot and that I'm not going to live past the 18 years old. So I get both ends of the spectrum. Both are valid. And we need to listen to these youth when they say those things to us and help them navigate this journey so that they know that you can be the doctor, you can be the nurse, you can be whatever you want to be. And for the other, we want you to live life. You have so much to give. You are significant and you bring value to us older people and to society. So it's all over the spectrum, and we need to let them know that they're important.
I think that's really good. And you can use your own personal experiences about this, because I got to believe teachers probably didn't have high expectations of you.
I agree. I think I had some teachers who were, this is just another little girl going through the process. And then I think I had some that were like, no, you can do it. You're going to have to work for it. It's not going to come easy, but you can do it and you will do it. So I think I had all different types of teachers. And mind you, I was in school in the 70s and 80s. So things were very, very rigid then.
In what sort of way were they rigid? What do you mean by that, Charisse?
What I mean by rigid is that there was only one way of learning. There was only one way of discipline. There was only one way, and it basically was their way or the highway. And I understand respecting authority, but we know that children learn differently. And that was not the way to go back in the 70s and 80s, where children learn differently. They're visual, they're auditory. And, you know, it wasn't like that. Children learn differently. And today, I'm glad that they get to have these experiences where teachers today understand that youth learn differently. And there's not a cookie cutter way to teach them.
I wonder, in retrospect, and you might, you know, not know this for sure, but I wonder if you would have had a different approach that was offered to you, an opportunity to not be in that rigid system, how your life might have been different. Have you ever pondered that? Have you ever thought about that?
I have not really thought about that much, but I guarantee you, it definitely would have been different. I really, really believe so. If I would have been able to get out of the classroom and experience the outside, like we've talked about, even more, or if I was able to connect travel to my learning or reading to my learning. And what I mean by reading about different people, not necessarily yes. people just in this curriculum that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm forced to teach you about, but the invisible people that made history that we never hear about. So I definitely think it would have been different.
I agree too. And clearly, you know, you have an impressive resume, you've accomplished great things in your career, all those, but you just wonder about time lost and opportunities missed. And how many of our young people have had so many of those missed opportunities, but then never really recovered in the way you did? They went down a path and it was a kind of a point of no return that we know happens to so many young people. And I think that's just a shame.
I agree. We have to be more accountable to our children. We really do.
Mm-hmm. So at what point then did you go back to community college? So we've talked about your earlier years. When did you go to community college then?
I went to community college in the 90s. I went to the local community college here, Columbus State Community College, and I decided I'm going to get an associate's degree in business. And I really love the community college. I would recommend community college to anyone. I think it's a great starting point. The people there, the instructors, they have hands-on real-life experience in the marketplace, and they have a lot to bring. And not saying that instructors at four-year institutions do not, but the two-year community college is great. They're great.
And how old were you when you started doing that? Was it right after you graduated from high school? Was there a gap in time?
There was a gap. I was actually in my 20s.
Okay.
I was in my 20s when I went to community college. So again, it wasn't a linear process for me. There were all of these ebbs and flows and gaps that took place because life is happening at the same time that I now have this little one. So definitely gaps, definitely in my 20s, but I fit right in because there were other people there too that were in their 20s. And there were people there that were in their 70s and 80s and those who were in their teens. It gave me a great opportunity to interact with other age groups and people from other paradigms. There were people from rural Ohio coming into the local community college. There were people from urban communities coming in too. So I just really, really loved it. Online was not popular then at all. It really didn't even exist. We had to communicate face to face and with one another.
How did the birth of your child change you and your worldview and your perspective on life and your perspective on people?
Wow. Wow, that's a really, really good question. One, I would say I would not change it for the world. I had her mm-hmm. at 18. I would not change that for the world. She has brought mm-hmm. a lot of joy into my life. She's brought a lot of learning lessons into my life. But it made me have to grow up really quick, really fast. And knowing that this child has to be taken care of and nurtured and loved to be a productive citizen. And that was my overall goal. I want to say I did not know it all. A matter of fact, I didn't know anything. And so mm-hmm. I thank God for parents that supported me and family that supported me and came around me and were there for me. And I would suggest to anyone, listen to those who are seasoned and take the information that you need and throw away that you don't need. Because there's going to be some things that you don't agree with and some things that you don't need. But having a young person at such an early age made me realize I have to be responsible. I have to be accountable. I need help. And it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to surrender. You know, that was one of the biggest things, having that control. I had control and I wanted to control, but there were times where I had to surrender that control for the betterment of my daughter. It was a lot. It was a lot, but it was very doable.
So you took this experience of being a mother at a young age and took it upon yourself to be more responsible, to reach out, trust others, to lean on them for support and guidance. You really were vulnerable and your need for help, but you embraced it. You took it on and it, I think, changed you for the better. And I think it really opened your sense of empathy and understanding and willingness to realize what other people can offer you. And in youth work, that's what we want to do. We want to be that person that young people can trust and know that we care about. You kind of live that side, the other side of it. You had people that you trusted.
Absolutely. I had people that I trusted, people that I could rely on. And I want to preface again, there were times when I did not want to listen. There were times when I did not want to surrender control of thought, control of actions. There were many of those times, but in the long run, it was what was best to do for myself, for my daughter, so we could both be better. And it all worked out. When you're in it, you don't see it. But long term, as you grow and as you mature and as your emotional intelligence develops, you understand why. And these individuals who are trying to help you, they're not really trying to harm you. They really are trying to help you. Although being young, we process it as being harmful. It really isn't.
I got to believe that has just changed you for the better and really had a big impact on how you view your work with young people. All those things together must really dictate your value systems and what you bring to your work every day.
Absolutely. The young people today, they have a voice. Their voice is important. Listen to their stories. Have that active listening skill in place. And then give them advice if they need it. Sometimes they just need you to be a listening ear, yeah. Be that sounding board. And other times they're not asking for help, but that's what they need. So you really have to discern what they want, when they want it, and how they want it.
Well said. We have to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to talk to you more about how your community college experience changed you. So we'll be right back.
No matter how you support our young people, the Professional Youth Worker powered by YIPA has your training and learning needs covered. Visit training.yipa.org. That's training.yipa.org to see for yourself and then join the thousands of youth workers around the globe who learn from our easy-to-access exceptional trainings. From our blogs to our podcasts, the Professional Youth Worker is your go-to resource for tools to help you keep going, keep learning, and keep growing. Members enjoy free unlimited access to live online and on-demand trainings and a preferred discount pricing for a one-of-a-kind certificate course. Annual memberships are just $99 for individuals and only $250 for your entire organization. Visit training.yipa.org today to learn more. That's training.yipa.org.
We're back with Dr. Charisse Penn from Ohio in the United States. Right before the break, you were telling us how the story of your daughter being born when you were young affected you in so many positive sort of ways. You went back to community college. You were exposed to these, a very diverse group of people with different opinions and different life experiences. How did community college change you, and how did you grow from that?
I think community college changed me in a way where it gave me a sense of an extended family, and I thought that was very important for my success. So I was able to gravitate to instructors and to other students, and we were able to go down this path or this journey together. And that was very, very helpful. And I think sometimes you may or may not get that in larger institutions. But for me, the community college was an extension of family. People got to know my name in the registrar's office, in the financial aid office, actually gained employment part-time working at my local community college in admissions to help recruit other students. So it gave me a foundation that I believe was needed to help me go along this journey.
That's such a cool story. Too bad you didn't have that when you were younger. You found it in community college, but you didn't have it in high school. That's wonderful. So that you must have felt like you really belong in the academic world. Certainly, I believe you probably thought you could compete intellectually with people. And you also were able to socially connect with people. So what happened after that then? Did you go to get your bachelor's degree right away?
So what happened after that? Actually, one of my friends in the community college said, are you going to go ahead and work on your 4-year degree? You really need to do that. And I was like, no, I'm not. And I did not do that right away like some of the others did. Again, yeah. I had a daughter, so I felt like I needed to rest and take a break from doing schoolwork and work and take care of my daughter. But eventually I realized that, oh my gosh, I should have went on like everybody else and persisted and went through with it, but I did not. And I realized I needed to go back. And then I went to finish my additional 2 years at a private Christian college.
Were you working with young people at that time, or when did your exposure to youth work happen?
I had worked with young people, like volunteering in children's ministry and things like that, but it really didn't happen until much later in my life, where I was working for a $1 billion company and just wasn't liking some of the things that I was seeing morally and ethically. Mm-hmm. And I was working on my doctorate degree. And one day I just said, I can't do this anymore. And I walked away from it.
Wow.
I walked away. I was making great money, and money is not everything. I had to make a decision to let my yes be yes and my no be no. And I decided no more. I walked away from it. And then at that time, I was not working at a job. I was working on my doctorate degree. And then I said, okay, I need to go back to work because I need income. And then this opportunity with youth work came available. And I was like, this is it. I felt like revigorated. I felt rejuvenated. I felt like, hey, I was getting a second chance and a jump start because I've always cared for young people, and especially those who might not have, again, a linear path, those who have this nonlinear experience or journey. So I was like, this is something I can do. I can make an impact here, and I can be successful at helping others be successful.
So you walked away from a corporate life where money was probably more significant than it is in the youth work field, for sure. And you took, it sounds to me like, the lessons you learned in life all throughout this point and wanted to turn that back and give that gift to somebody else. Is that too much hyperbole to say it that way?
It is not. You're absolutely right. To me, it's about legacy. It's not just about my legacy. It's about helping someone else leave a legacy too. And I think we get away from that. Legacy is still important. What is your legacy? What do you want it to be? And so I think for myself and many others, our legacy is we helped others, and we want other people to know that we helped others meet their goals. We made a positive impact on others. I believe legacy is something that we need to get back to. What is your legacy?
That's interesting. I don't even think many people think about legacy. And here you are so attuned to that and willing to give of yourself and pour your heart into helping other people. Where did that altruism come from? Where did that sense of deep understanding of who your inner character is come from?
I would say definitely from my family members. My mom lost her mother very early in life. My grandmother died in her early 30s. My great-grandmother died in her early 20s. They were poor. They did not have health insurance back in those days. Mm-hmm. And my aunts, who were born in the late 1800s, had no kids, took on my mom and her siblings because they did not want them in foster care, took them on at the age of 50. And I think that resilience and all of that character comes from those older elders in my family. And again, being exposed to their struggle, being exposed to the stories that they shared with my family, it just trickled down from generation to generation to generation.
So how long ago did you get your doctorate then? How long have you been Dr. Charisse Penn?
It took me 7 years to get my doctorate degree. I just conferred that in 2019.
Wow. So you really stuck with it. You had, sounds like probably a lot of obstacles in the way that made that difficult to achieve in a quick sort of way.
Absolutely. There were definitely barriers, but being persistent to the end and having, again, support of family, support of friends, support of instructors, my dissertation chair, she was supportive in my committee. It meant the world to me.
Here's what I need to know. It took you 7 years to get your doctorate degree. Why were you so passionate about achieving that?
Wow, I love that question. One, legacy. I was leaving a legacy for my nieces, for my nephews, for my daughter, for my future grandchildren. I was leaving a legacy. Two, I just knew that I could do it. It would be an impact, and it could be something that could be used as a tool to have influence to help others and impact them in a positive way. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And you can start at 21, 25, or 50, or 70. Just get started, get moving. So those are some of the reasons why.
Well, those are good reasons. And you are an impressive person. Are you self-reflective? Do you do a lot of pondering about your situation, your life, your actions, those kinds of things?
At times I do. At times I'm self-reflective. What could I have done better? What's working? What's not working? What do I want the future to look like? So when I have a break, there are times when I definitely do that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important in youth work to be self-reflective, because here's what we've learned, that your struggles, your perseverance, your trust propelled you to be a leader in your field. And you have taken what could have been, I think, a bad situation and turned it into gold. And I think that happens because you're willing to look at yourself and you're willing to examine your circumstances, what your potential is, and what you have to do to go get those things.
Absolutely. Although I'm definitely a perfectionist at heart, yeah, I am still learning, even today in my 50s, still learning that we're imperfect people in an imperfect world, and you don't have to be perfect. You can let go of some of the control. you can be willing to fail and learn from those failures and learn and grow from them. It's okay. It's all right. And you're going to be okay and better for it.
Well said. We're nearing our end of our time together, but I ask every person who comes on The Passionate Youth Worker to leave the listeners with words of inspiration or wisdom. What can you leave with our listeners today, Charisse?
I would say to the listeners, never give up, never give in, never stop. Remember to always have a forgiving heart towards others, always have a compassionate heart towards others, and to take up your mat and walk. That means pick up whatever you want to do, go wherever you want to go, go in peace and be whole. And that's up to you.
Dr. Charisse Penn, thank you so much for taking time to be on the podcast with us. I, for one, am so grateful for everything you've done and all the people that you've had a positive impact on in the past, and all the people out there that don't even know how you're going to change their lives yet. There's still to come. So thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you for having me, Paul. I appreciate you dearly.
Thank you. And thank you to all the listeners out there, all the youth workers who are so committed to helping our young people and exploring what they can do to make circumstances better for the young people that they care so deeply about. We want you to know we care deeply for you and we're rooting for you and we want you to succeed. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to share your passion for youth work, we'd love to spotlight you as a guest. If you have feedback, either positive or negative, about the show, please let us know. You can do both by visiting training.yipa.org. That's training.yipa.org, and click on the podcast tab. This podcast is made possible in part due to the generous contribution from M Health Fairview. I'm your host, Paul Menier. Thanks for listening to The Passionate Youth Worker.